Number one, Star Wars. Number two, comics. Number three, Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. Number four, Mario. Number five, Weird Al. Number six, Batman. Number seven, Kal-El. Number eight, The Simpsons. Number nine, TV. Number ten, every single band that I stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out. Say it all together if you're with me now. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Say nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Nerds Ruin Everything. I'm Logan.
And I'm Adam.
And we got a lot of stuff to talk about, I think. But starting with news.
Yeah. So, like, oh, and first off, let's just say this up front. It's not about Zavisoft. Thank fucking God.
Okay. Very, very briefly. Because I want to talk about the Ben Solo thing. Yeah. But since you brought him up, I, like, still don't like the man. And yeah. I know it's not all him. But the fact that Warner Brothers keeps giving middle fingers to Paramount and that whole group over there, it makes me happy. Like, I'm still not happy with Warner Brothers, and I know, like, Zaslav might ultimately, he's not probably not going to be in charge of Warner Brothers because they're splitting them back up.
Yeah.
But it does make me happy that they're just like, nah, dog, we just had the best year we've had possibly ever, but at least in this century. And no, we're not selling to you for $24 a share.
Yep. Yep. No, we're not going to do that, Larry Ellison. Fuck you. Fuck you, Payne.
So I'm really, really enjoying that. So, anyway, on to, speaking of conglomerations that, you know, we're not happy with, the real news, or not real news, I guess it's news, like you were saying before I hit record, is it really news when something doesn't happen?
Yeah.
But it kind of is, and it's definitely in our purview of things we love to talk about. Disney said no to a Ben Solo movie developed by Adam Driver and somebody else pretty notable.
Oh, two people very notable. Steven fucking Soderbergh and Scott Z. Burns. Scott Z. Burns is like one of the premier screenwriters in Hollywood. He's literally like, if Tony Gilroy had his, like, quirky, like, other, he would be Scott Z. Burns. He's the guy who wrote The Informant. He writes these very quirky but very political thrillers. He's written for Spielberg. He's ghostwritten for Spielberg. I think he's even collaborated with Gilroy, which everybody loves because of Andor. And when you get Steven fucking Soderbergh to, like, it's been known that Soderbergh is a very, like, geeky guy. He loves the original trilogy. He loves genre. I mean, he made one of the best, like, one of the best spy movies, like, spy action films in Haywire. Like, I don't know if anybody has seen it, but if you have, you absolutely know what I am talking about. Like, regardless of what Gina Carano is right now.
Yeah, Haywire is a lot of fun.
But her, she got the work in Star Wars because of her work in Haywire. Like, yeah, without
it kind of proved that, like, she could be an actress, not just it's Deadpool she's in, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, she's just muscle in Deadpool.
Yep.
You know?
And she's also Haywire's in Fast and Furious. Fast and Furious,
yeah,
also.
Yeah.
And she's muscle there too. Like, I mean, she does nothing like in those movies, but in Haywire, like you said, I mean, she spends time with Bill Paxton. But Bill Paxton steals the fucking show. But I mean, he was fucking Bill Paxton. I mean, what do you expect, right? But you know, yeah. I don't know, man. Like, this really fucking, like, how do you say no to Adam Driver willing to come back?
It's the reasoning, and if it was just like, yeah, we're really not sure what we want to do with Star Wars. This sounds really interesting, but right now we're just keeping it like we're just not doing much, you know.
Yeah,
movie wise, anything other than like, well, but Ben Solo died, and we don't see how he can come back. Are you fucking kidding me? Like, in a world where you nothing away the death of Palpatine.
Yeah, like they couldn't explain any
real explanation.
He's back. I mean, yeah. Are you fucking kidding me?
Somehow Palpatine returned. Like that, I know we get the like clone stuff, but it's so stupid and convoluted.
Yeah.
That it even in a world in a Star Wars universe full of dumb, convoluted ideas, a lot of which are perpetrated by the creator, Midichlorians.
Yeah.
That's worse than anything George ever came up with. Is just like somehow he returned. Like, oh yeah, he was cloning himself, and like here's like literal half-assed explanations. But they come up with this, you know, maybe it doesn't work. Maybe it's only fun and exciting because it's these guys, and we're like, oh, that would be awesome. But I don't know, man. They're fucking worse things, you know? Like, how much money have y'all dumped down the drain developing Star Wars shit that hasn't happened?
Yep.
And, I mean, every once in a while, Soderbergh, I think, gets his teeth on something that ultimately he's just like, oh, I don't like the taste of that, and then walks away. Mm-hmm. But, like, I don't... he's generally a guy's like, if he wants to do it, he's gonna do it. And you don't 100%. Have to worry about it, you know?
Yeah, you don't. Like, this is what's so frustrating to me, is that you said, like, that's the thing, is that they said they could not explain his return, but to me it's like, what are you talking about? You, like, you literally sat there and just gave, like, it was it all, is it all hail J.J. Abrams? And whatever the fuck he wanted to do, he wanted to do, but you don't want to talk about that. Like, because literally, Palpatine's back. He said it in an opening fucking crawl and left Dave Filoni to actually try to fill in the gaps with his fucking, with his TV shows. Like, literally, the dude is like, you know, like, Mr. Johnson from fucking, I don't know if you saw the this week's fucking Abbott, but...
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun stuff with Mr. Johnson and Abbott
Elementary. Oh, God, yes. Seven alligators in 10 minutes.
Yeah, the Philly game, and, yeah. Like, him, the suspected being the Philly fanatic.
Yep.
Yeah, this is a lot of fun stuff with him. But yeah, like, it is like that.
It's literally like he's playing cleanup. Like, Filoni is playing cleanup with this bullshit. Not able to, like... I mean, and I suspect Andor is going to be more of that shit. Or not Andor, but season 2 of Ahsoka. Like, we're not, like we're not going to get as much of the reunion as, like, the Rebels sequel that I wanted, which I thought that the first Ahsoka was going to be, which it really kind of wasn't. You know, I don't know, man. Like... It really pisses me off that they're sitting there and literally, I don't care how bad it is. Like, you spent $500 million on The Last Jedi and J.J. Abrams' bullshit because he didn't like what he got mad. He got butthurt
Ryan Johnson didn't pick up his ball and play with it.
Yeah.
Instead went in a different direction, and it's really, really frustrating when you read about these ideas that didn't happen. Like, yeah. Even going back to the proposed original, was it Colin Trevorrow?
The Trevorrows.
And, you know, Trevorrow's not somebody we adore, but like, at least it was a swing. Like, JJ's was just like, oh, we gotta just bring it back to
Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Original trilogy shit. And It's been so frustrating. Did you see somebody stuck a microphone in George Lucas, or asked George Lucas if he would buy Star Wars back?
Yeah.
And then stuck a microphone in his face for a response. And his response was basically just like, no.
No.
I have a life.
Yeah. I feel so much better not having control of this because you guys have gotten so much more worse.
Yeah. It's maddening. Like, I don't know that we would have loved what George did with, like, what his original vision was, but I do know it would have been not this. And,
yeah,
you know, it's taken a lot of people a lot of time to come around to the prequel trilogy. Both of us included, like there was a chunk of time where I was like, and a lot of that has to do with the Clone Wars series, like retroactively making those movies better. But there's still a lot of people who will poo-poo, like, and I don't blame them. Like, they're not great movies, but they are fun movies, you know? And it's just like, I would rather have that than what we've gotten. The side projects are better than the main projects under Disney. Even the TV shows. I think even a failure like what was the prequel TV show that they did last year?
Oh God!
I'm drawing a blank. Set before
the
Republic series.
Yeah, not it's not
Acolyte. The Acolyte.
Yeah, the Acolyte.
Even a failure like the Acolyte has at least more to offer than some retread bullshit like Rise of Skywalker. And I mean, honestly, even Force Awakens, as fun as Force Awakens is,
yeah.
You know, and I had my problems with Last Jedi too, but you know, it's better than the other two.
Yeah, at least it's taking a swing and try something new.
Yep.
Like, and give, like, regardless of what Hamill says, and I know that Hamill kind of inadvertently led the charge of why did we do this with us, but what I don't think that anybody realizes is that, like, If you made Hamill Yoda, then he's Yoda, and you don't have anything good to play. He is so good in that because Rian Johnson went against the grain. And I'm just like, y'all don't understand. In 30 years, y'all are going to be wrong because this is going to be the empire of this series. And I don't think that there's going to be any kind of reclamation project with JJ's 1 and 3 because literally all he did was remake, like, and I have been on record. I am the snarkiest fucking fanboy about JJ and his bullshit, but A New Hope, like remaking A New Hope does not make you a genius. Does not make you like on the same, like, this is the problem is that he has a bunch of movies that are just fucking remakes of other movies. And he's been labeled this like, you know, certified genius because of the box office.
What's he done since?
Nothing. He's still like, we're still sitting here going, okay, JJ, nice. Like, I watched your series Duster, but that was more of what's her name than it was you. Like that doesn't even feel like you, but I mean, you know,
produced what is Duster you? And a Batman animated show that will not air.
Yeah.
On that, or that didn't air. On HBO or Max or whatever. Yep. It's airing on Prime because they sold it to Prime.
And it like, took 3 years. It took three years for it.
And it's good. It's a good show, but that's what you've managed in the, I mean, it's been 5 years since
his $500 million fucking, his half a billion dollar swindle. Yeah. With HBO, his $600 million or his $500 million swindle.
So,
like, but yeah.
Adversely, like, I did see the trailer for Mandalorian and Grogu
on IMAX screen. Yeah.
And I'm really excited for that. It could also just be like, but it at least looks fun.
Yeah. Know? No, it does.
I'm more excited about Star Wars now than I have been in a few years. But, yeah, you read something like this and it's just like, you just keep going back to like what we could have had. And instead, it's just been like, oh, shoulder shrug. We don't know what to do with Star Wars on the big screen because nothing seems to work. But it's just like, no, y'all just keep listening to trolls online.
Yep.
You know, it's so fucking frustrating.
So maybe we should just get James Gunn to run it. Jesus
Christ. Yeah. James Gunn Star Wars would be interesting. I think we kind of already saw it.
Yeah, we did.
Galaxy.
Yeah.
But, you know, whatever.
And then his sequel trilogy is literally going to be Supergirl. I mean, that's literally what it, like, I don't know if I ruined that for a lot of people, but I don't think that they understand how cosmic. I'm very curious if he does go cosmic
you've got Lobo. Like, yeah. It's going to be a space adventure. So that's, and
with a space there's dog also again.
this Robin movie that
they has keep now on talking.
Taken.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's taken like precedent over the Brave and the Bold stuff, it seems.
I wanted to ask you about that because like, a bunch of fan conjecture keeps on coming up that they somehow convinced Reeves to put Pattinson into the universe.
I do not think that's happening.
I don't think so either. And I wanted your opinion about that because it feels more like fanboy speculation in like, what do they call it? Like fanboy wishing, like down a wishing well, because
I think Gunn's Batman is going to wind up being more like our beloved Batman, the animated series.
Yeah.
Batman. Like that level of kind of like stoic, dry wit Batman.
Okay.
And you know, Pattinson's Batman is very dirty.
Like, he's if very
that makes sense.
Well, he's the like, so like I think that when Reeves in his commentary said that, like, you know, a lot of the inspiration came from Nirvana, it makes sense. Because, like, I mean, of course, like, Nirvana, like, the...
Yeah, grunge
like the
Batman. Fish, yeah,
grunge that makes Batman. Sense. He's very Kurt Cobain. Like, at the end, you could see him dying. Like, if he dies at the end of the...
And not in the bullshit way that Nolan did it. Like, very much...
Like, dies.
Yeah.
Like dead. Like, D-E-D dead. Like depressing. Because this series is designed... Like, that first movie is designed as a whole thing of, like, this is not... This is like, you know, this is very, very much a, like, even though Pattinson's Gen Y, it feels very much a Gen X, like, Gen
for X sure.
Millennial. Like, it's like, like, Reeves is our age, right? Like,
why the fuck couldn't they get Matt Reeves to remake The Crow, man?
Oh, man. Because ultimately, we know it's supposed to go to...
That's what he made.
Yeah, he did.
He made The Crow, except it's Batman, and he doesn't die at the end. Because he's not fighting some fucking... I mean, he is fighting a twisted person, but it's not, you know, a dude in... Well, I mean, the Crow wears clown makeup, but you know what I mean. It's not like this weird, over-the-top circus kind of thing. It's gritty and grungy, and like I just am now like sitting here going like, oh shit, he remade The Crow. Like thinking about it, I'm like that's kind of what it is.
Yeah,
and
very much so.
Instead we got that shitty ass. I watched 10 minutes of that Crow movie and I was like, nah, I'm good.
As much as I like it was so like
Madam Web is better than that.
Yeah. Like, it's
I've seen Madam Web twice. Maybe three times. I can't make it through 10 minutes of that Crow movie.
Man, that Crow movie is like if Young Gravy decided to make The Crow. If you know who Young Gravy is. Like, that's literally what it is. I'm like, and why do I fucking have to know who Young Gravy is? Like, I'm just going to say, I'm going to put that fucking out there. Like, why do I need to know who Young Gravy is? Like, the fact that the internet has put this in my fucking head is, like, disgusting. Yeah. But, I go ahead. Oh, like, you were
I was going to say, since you brought up Gunn.
Uh-huh.
We didn't talk about this last week, but no, we did finish Peacemaker.
Yes.
Season 2, the probable final season. Which, that feels weird.
It really does. And it feels, okay, like, first off, I feel like it's both the right thing to do and the wrong thing to do. Because after this season, it's like, where do you go without doing a movie or it being a part, like it being a part of a movie? Because if you thought the budget was kind of big now, it's going to be even bigger because the storyline that it's connecting to, the planet it's connected to, like where they all led it to, it really does feel like a connected, like more than any of the Marvel TV series. This really does feel like a puzzle piece connecting to World of World of Tomorrow?
Batman. Well, are you talking about the Supergirl movie?
No, the Batman movie. I'm sorry, the Superman movie. The Superman movie. Man of Tomorrow. It really does feel like it's a piece. Like, it's not a perfect piece, but it's like an indication of that. And, like, also, like, the fact that, like, I feel like because of this show and where it headed at the end, like, I'm confident in saying that Gunn is going very cosmic with his version of, it's almost like it's an extension of what he got a taste of sci-fi and was like in Guardians and was like, oh, I can do this all fucking day. And decided with Superman the way, because he's been on record, right? He's been on record as saying the Superman is not his dude. Though he does the best Superman in 30 fucking years.
Yeah. You made the best Superman movie since 1980 something. Or 1980?
When did Superman 2 come out? 80. Yeah. But you also you gave us hints of cosmic, but now the indications are, like, I didn't think
the Supergirl movie, like we were just talking about, I think it's for sure going to be like outer space heavy. So, like, that's going to be really interesting. I don't love leaving Peacemaker stranded. Like, I understand why you do that, but with no. So it's one of those things where it's like, you kill your main character at the end because you don't know how to write an ending. And I get you wanted to, like, wrap up a lot of stuff and have a little, like, messy bow on things because, of course, you gotta get him back. You gotta pay him back for what he did to your son. So, like, something has to happen there. Like, those two can't go on existing in the same world in the same way, especially if, you know, Peacemaker is going to be a prominent member of Checkmate. Like, it's not going to sit right, and it's going to leave that story open. So if you don't have plans, I kind of get it, but I guess at least they didn't kill him. They just put him somewhere, like, oh, we'll put him in this pocket over here, in this drawer, and we'll save him for later. But then now you've written yourself into a, like, well, how do we get him back kind of thing?
Exactly. And, like, it really does, like, it leaves a huge, like, that's the thing to me is that, like, that's the bad thing is that you leave a huge, like, it's huge, right? Like, it's not a little, like, he's become, like, for people, like, over these last two seasons, it's pretty much been a redemption thing. right? Like, you've taken this shitty character who is designed to be shitty in the Suicide Squad.
Yeah, like, from the jump, you're just like, I like this guy, but I don't like this guy. It's a, like, I know I bring up BoJack a lot, but it is a BoJack thing where it's like, oh, yeah, like, I'm kind of rooting for this guy who is an awful, awful person. And, you know, then you're not redeeming a character so much as you are showing this guy realizing that he's thought about things the complete wrong way. I mean, yeah. It is a redemption, but it's not the way they typically do it.
Absolutely.
It's just him changing his mind and understanding why, you know, the way he had existed was just not good. And they do it really, really well. And part of that is kind of like, you got to pay for your crimes, dude. Shouldn't have killed Flag. You did it because you were told to do it. And afterwards, like, your disillusionment has led you here, but you still have to pay the price for that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Gunn has said he's not done with the character. So, I mean, we'll see. Maybe Supergirl. It's really funny to me because the Supergirl movie is based on a series called Supergirl Woman of Tomorrow.
Tomorrow, yeah.
And then now it's just, which was the original title of the movie. But now it's just called Supergirl.
Mm-hmm.
Presumably, like, at the time, I was like, oh, okay, I guess for just ease of everything, we're just going to call it Supergirl. And then, like, he announces the next Superman movie is going to be called Man of Tomorrow. I'm like, oh, well, that's why you did it. Because you needed that title for your Superman movie. And you're like, we can't have Supergirl Woman of Tomorrow. And then a year later, Superman Man of Tomorrow.
Yeah.
People are going to be like, no.
The thing, I also think that the thing that makes me like, we're not getting a season three is not just because of Peacemaker, but it's the time.
Actually, we've for me, it's not for Peacemaker at all. Like, as much as I've loved John Cena, I think he's really good, but like, that can wear a little thin. It's literally everybody else on the show.
Yeah. Like,
Danielle Brooks needs to be in the fucking discussion for Best Supporting Actress Emmy.
Yeah, like, she's that good.
She is so good. And she's great in season one.
Yeah.
She's so good in this season, specifically in the finale. Like, as much emotional shit as in the finale, she is the most emotional part. Like, I wonder if they shot, like, everybody kind of like talking to Chris and doing the whole like, you belong here, man. But at the end of the day, she was the only one that, like, performance wise, that absolutely nailed that, you know?
Yeah.
And so basically it just became like, we can't show everybody else because she's so fucking good, it makes everybody else look terrible. Or maybe it was always just her, but she gets like two or three really heavy emotional scenes in the last two episodes that just fucking blew me away, man.
Yeah, she's so good in this show. Like, and you're right.
I mean, she was great in Orange is the New Black. So yeah. I don't know why I would think she wouldn't be good in this, but it's like next level, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's the fact that she, like, okay, it's one thing to have one role in one performance where you show everybody just how good you are. It is another thing to continually up your game, because, like, I also remember her from Master of None, Aziz Ansari's show. And she's great in that. I know that you saw, I did not get to see, unfortunately, I did not get to see the Angel movie.
I'll insert here very, very, very briefly. I did go see Good Fortune.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's some really funny moments in it, mostly because Keanu Reeves is like really, really good at the deadpan, like kind of dumb but funny stuff. Everybody else is it's Aziz is not a good director. So
oh, that's pretty funny.
He doesn't know how to to keep the momentum going. Like the movie stalls out multiple times. It's fun, mm-hmm. but it is definitely a put it on and like just chill at your house movie, not a go out and see movie.
What you're saying is basically he's not Alan Yang. Like Alan Yang should have directed this and he just should have starred because Alan Yang is great. I mean, I haven't gotten to like Loot just dropped like the new season of Loot, and I haven't watched it.
It's pretty good. The first episode is definitely the best of the bunch so far. Like there's some shit that goes down in the first episode that was really, really funny. The couple since then have been okay. I mean, we'll see where they're going. It's funny. Loot and Good Fortune both kind of have the same, like driving home the same point, which is, you know, billionaires equal not good.
Yeah, suck.
and it's, while I appreciate that, it feels like something that most of us should already know by now. So it feels like a little like, oh, you just like, this is the thing you keep hammering home. But Loot is a lot more fun than I think Good Fortune was. It's just like, it's a good time to like sit on your couch and watch with your dog. Maybe not spend $30 or $50 or whatever to go see it.
So. Yeah. Okay. I mean, I was going to try to get out to see it, but you know, because like also the box office, unfortunately, it's going to be out on VOD in a couple of weeks. I mean, like that's unfortunate. It's unfortunate, but that's just the way that it's the way the cookie crumbles right now nowadays. But back to Peacemaker and Daniel Brooks, she's amazing. Like the entire cast is so like, I'm going to make an analogy because, okay, so like I finally finished a show and fuck that show. I'm not going to watch the second season because I really disliked it. The Paper. I did not like The Paper at all. told me. You warned me. And it's.
There's one character who almost single-handedly ruins the show.
Yeah. It's like, and I, no offense to her, she leans into what they're asking her to do. But to be perfectly honest, like, fuck that show because it, without her, it becomes a very, like, it's very, like, I realize now that it was never Greg Daniels that made The Office great. It was all of the, it was the bullpen of writers like Alan Yang, like Michael Schur, especially Michael Schur. Like, Michael Schur is, like, in our household, Michael Schur is the dude. Like, there's nobody else. He is the Spielberg of television because his touch is, like, the Midas touch. And that's what The Paper is missing, is that it's all Greg Daniels. So, Greg, like, every time Greg Daniels has made something, he's always had a counterpoint. Like, you look at King of the Hill. He has Mike Judge. And Mike Judge is the softer of the two that allows humanity in. There is I just did not like, so I like, this was supposed to be The Office 2.0, but I'm going to make an analogy that Peacemaker is more Office 2.0 than the paper could ever be. Even though it's made by different creatives, it's that whole workplace kind of thing that it gets right. And it allows these people to, like, it already, like, in two seasons, it manages to find a rhythm that allows these characters to be exactly who they are. Like my favorite thing is watching the character arc of Economos, like, go from, like, this weirdo piece of shit to somebody who has social, like is brought into a social situation and accepted as this weirdo piece of shit. Or even like Adrian and Vigilante, like, all of them are like Economos is more like Dwight Schrute than anything, right? And that's where the, like, kind of entry point for me with The Office is. But also, it's like, it gives the all of these characters, who at times are the shittiest human beings in the world, they give them space to breathe and allow them to be, like, everything you want a person to be. Good, bad, and everything in between. But most of all, kind of fucking funny. Like, yeah. like I find that the funniest part about the show is, like, it's also, like, shame on everybody. Like, shame on you for not noticing that his perfect world doesn't have any POCs in it.
He doesn't notice, but, like, it with given his past and, like, all of the fucked up shit, you're just like, yeah, I mean, I guess it kind of, like, he's so caught up in my dad's alive and doesn't suck.
Yeah.
My brother's alive.
Yeah.
You know, and people here love me that, his brain just does not see all of the signs. But, you know, it takes a person of color 5 seconds out in the world, and they're just like, something's not right.
Right. Yeah. Which is hilarious. I mean, when I look at it, these two seasons are so fucking perfect for what they're supposed to be that you almost don't, like, I can understand where James Gunn, after seeing the final edit for everything, is like, I can end right here and it's okay. Like, yes, I have pieces that are, like, in air, but I can return to certain characters in certain other things and continue on their stories. Do I like it? No, I don't like it. But also, like, how do you not, if you're going to do it, you have to do it as a movie, because you have to deal with Chris in the planet of gods. Like, literally, we don't see it, but we all, like, if you even know a little bit about the storyline that they're cribbing from, like, that planet is, like, super fucking dangerous. Like, super dangerous. And, like, Chris having to go through that and navigate that, that's, like, literally Robin Caruso on Mars, $300 million movie. Like, that's what it would be. And you've got to, like, if you're not going to do it right, I guess not do it. I mean, and then it feels like a cop-out having him just jump into, him being able to escape. So it's almost like he painted himself into a corner that he's going to have to resolve in movies. In his Man of Tomorrow movie, because of the fact that it's going to be this big sci-fi epic, he can solve some of that, or he can give us hints of that there. I don't know. Like, I'm of two minds of it. It's just disappointing that we're not going to get another season of Peacemaker, and he's been pretty much adamant about it.
Yeah, but he's also changed his mind about shit before, so
yeah,
maybe he resolves it and we get Peacemaker back in this world or on this world, and in 3 years we do get Peacemaker season 3. That's why it felt weird to me, where he's just, like, closing the door. But I also think maybe it's saying you're not gonna do it, so that people aren't constantly asking you
about,
hey, what's up with Peacemaker? So, it's kind of a bummer if it does in there for a little while. But since we're talking about Peacemaker, one of the like standouts, even though a lot of his shit is really awkward in this season, was Tim Meadows.
Yes. And
if you want to see more of Tim Meadows, he is in a new show on CBS called DMV.
Yes, he is.
And have you watched any of it?
No, I have not.
It's okay. He's definitely the standout of the cast, but it also features our favorite religious fanboy what's his name? Tony. Shit. Isn't it Tony?
Yeah. Damn it. I forgot.
Cavallaro.
Cavallaro. Tony Cavallaro. Yeah. I just think of his character from Righteous Gemstones. His name is Keith in there, but he's not Keith, but he absolutely is Keith. Like, he will forever be Keith.
It's such an, like, about face from that character, like just a complete 180. He does not have long hair, and I feel like that was probably one of the conditions for being in another show, was like, I don't want to have long hair.
Yeah.
he is playing like a dude bro rather than like a weird awkward guy. Like, he's very outgoing, very kind of inappropriate, you know. He's not the quiet shy, so much so that it was like a good 5 minutes of him being on screen, I was like, oh shit, that's Tony, what's his name, that's Keith. Yeah, from Keith. From Righteous Gemstones.
It's Keith.
But yeah, Tim Meadows is definitely like the bright shining star of that show so far. If you're looking for more of the like awkward office, like mid-season office stuff, DMV is definitely more up your alley than The Paper. It's just, I hate to say this, but it has that like CBS-ness about it.
Oh,
where it's like a little too like palatable. You know? Yes.
No. I know what you mean. Okay.
It's like in comic books, it's called a house style, where it's just like, oh, like all these DC books kind of look the same.
It's like,
and all these Marvel books kind of look the same, because everybody has their own art style, but they're trying to make it like consistent from book to book, so the characters don't look wildly different. And CBS is definitely got a house style to them,
it does.
Especially for their half hour comedy shows.
Mm-hmm.
And this definitely falls into that, but it's still pretty good. It's
okay.
It's definitely got legs. It could use a little something, but
when I saw the previews, it felt very much like Superstore. Like, yeah. I don't know if you watch
I love Superstore.
Superstore didn't get its legs until like the third or fourth season. Like, once everybody started ignoring it, that's when it became super interesting for me. Like, the last three or four seasons, where they really let the characters be who they were, and like America Ferrera was allowed to be like this like weird, like as weird as she was in the first couple of seasons of Ugly Betty, right? Like, I feel like she's never truly, like, it's weird because, like, there's this thing of, like, I know it sounds weird that I'm going off on this tangent about America Ferrera, but it's like, she was one type of, like, actress, and then she formed into, like she was this awkward teenager that was kind of, like, she wasn't fat. Like, she was basically a normal girl in Real Women Have Curves, right? But then she lost her baby fat, she became this beautiful woman, and all of a sudden they changed, like, they didn't know what to do with her, right? Like, oh, you were this one person. We can give you kind of funny roles, but we can't give you the quirky roles, right? And but then in Superstore, they finally let her do that. They let her be what I feel like is more keen to like her talents, like what she was in Barbie. Like Barbie to me is like Greta Gerwig knew how to write her. Like, and I almost wish that Greta wasn't going into this fantasy realm, like for the next decade with the Jesus lion and everything. But I mean, I know that that's important to her. But because if she could, like, if she did something like more what she did with Barbie and more what she did with Lady Bird, like having somebody like America Ferrera in that mix is kind of like unique. And I know it sounds weird and I've gone off on a tangent, but I really do love her as an actress. And, you know, to see somebody not really kind of, it's like Tim Meadows, like, you know, unlocking somebody that you know, like, Tim Meadows has been around for 20 fucking years. Why has it been that we had to, because he had one bad movie with Ladies Man, which isn't a bad movie. It's just, it's like Pat, right? Like, all SNL movies from that time are kind of fucking weird. But we missed out on 20 years of truly great, like, vibey energy from Tim Meadows.
Yeah.
You know, I don't get that with actors, is how, like, one thing, and it's like, oh, they're done. Like, we can't, like, you know, they're talented, and we know that they're talented, but let's just not do anything with them.
Yeah.
You know? But anyway.
Yeah. I do think DMV, like, it's worth
taking a look.
Looking into. Okay. You know, it's a show that that's, you could kind of have it on in the background, like after you kind of have watched it, and once it builds up a good like body, assuming it lasts, it's definitely a, you know, comfort kind of show.
Okay.
You know, I feel the same way about St. Denis Medical though, the new Justin Spencer show, since you brought up Superstore. Like it had a pretty solid, fun first season. But before we get to Springsteen, I know I brought this up a couple of weeks ago about Gen V coming back.
Yes,
it did just end season two. I know I wasn't high on season one. I don't think, did you ever, I know I asked you this. Did you dive at all into season one?
Nope.
Yep.
So he's already got my anxiety for the boys.
Okay. So you don't have to watch season one. They will kind of clue you in on everything. But they just finished season two. And I really, maybe I'm wrong, but I really think season two is giving you a lot of, like, oh, this is what we're going to have in the boys. Like, this is, without spoiling anything, mm-hmm. I'll just say this is the answer to what the fuck are we going to do about Homelander?
Oh, okay. So this is almost like a side mission.
It's also like you were talking about the cohesion like that DC is having, and it feels way better than what this is better than either one of them. Like,
oh, wow.
The way this show, like season one felt uneven to me,
mm-hmm.
but this season feels so cohesive to what we're getting from the boys, and it feels definitely is a lead in to like this final season. I know I'd already praised it, but like the finale was so fucking good. So good. Like, it's so good that, you know, similarly like with Peacemaker, it makes me really frustrated that Marvel cannot produce something that is entertaining, moves the story along, and also ties into a bigger universe. This guy's doing it. Why can't you do it? Like, I've realized that the boys, like, it's not, we maintain the status quo for the boys, even though it kind of is. Like, they do want to, like, move that story along. And Marvel, for at least since end of the Infinity Saga, has kind of just wanted to maintain the status quo. And that's not working. No. So, I cannot tell you how absolutely just like stand up out of your chair, like, whoa, fucking season two of Gen V is. I did not enjoy season one. I know I've said that, but yeah, it's such a stark fucking contrast that I'm like, I need to go back and watch season one,
mm-hmm,
because like maybe it was better than I thought it was. But like, it, even like I listened to the Midnight Boys talk about it, like, and they kind of talked about like, yeah, like season one was just like, okay, but this is phenomenal fucking superhero television. And it goes places that I didn't imagine it could. It has some of the best performances. Like, it's right up there with Peacemaker for like, this is what you do with superheroes on TV.
Okay.
Like,
oh, wow.
Or in an episodic format. It's fucking great. So anyway, I've said my piece. Let's talk about the boss.
Oh, Bruce Riley. So, okay. I'm going to be very, very prickly about this. But I want to say something first. Like, before anything, let me just say this. Jeremy Allen White is an amazing fucking talent. And
this is a fucking phenomenal performance. I feel like, yes, I've said this multiple times in the last month. This is a really great performance in a movie that might not deserve it.
Yes, because after I finished up this movie, I literally expected a title thing that literally said Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band will return in The Boss. Oh, deliver me to Born in the USA.
I mean, did you see the interview with the director?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, oh, well, Bruce wants to do a sequel. Like,
yeah,
you're making a sequel to a biopic? Like, come on, man. We talked about this last week. Like, the trailer made this feel so self-important.
It really did.
I get it. I get it.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. If I'd never seen that trailer, if I didn't know a lot of the shit, like,
yeah,
not about Bruce's life, but just about like the movie and like all of the marketing around it, I probably would have watched this and been like, that was really good. Like, it's a great lead performance. Like, it is a little too much like, oh, hey, by the way, this white dude needed therapy. You know what I mean? It's a little too like, oh, wait, like, that's the climax of the movie, is his friend and producer or producing partner. Producer.
Yeah. Manager. Like, manager.
Yeah, manager. On the phone with him going like, you got to get some help, man.
Yeah.
And him actually doing it. Like,
yeah. But you don't see anything. So here's my problem. The therapist is like, I'm just here to see whatever you want to say. And I'm like, and then Bruce is like, and it's an amazing emotional moment, but it's like the wrong place. It's like, I need him to start talking, not just break down and cry.
Yeah.
And like, oh, okay.
Even like one word there, exactly, or a sentence there might have felt a little more cathartic.
Yeah. don't fucking do this, Sean. Don't fucking do this. Don't fucking do this. Or because fuck him. because fuck him. Yeah. Like, it literally felt like it was like, oh, you're Crippen from Good Will Hunting. Like, I, man, yeah. Like white dudes will do anything not to go to therapy.
Yeah, it really is that. And yeah. I will say that I even told Steph this leaving the movie. Yeah. I was like, I was real fucking glad they didn't have that dumbass speech from the trailer in it. Like,
oh my God, thank God.
I kept waiting for that because it makes me want it, like it. I, my eyes just roll into the back of my head when Jeremy Strong starts.
He's gonna fixer. Heal the world.
Like, yeah, it's. But okay, all that aside, like the all of that aside, because that is just so dumb. Even if it's true, it doesn't make it less dumb. And I understand it was the 80s, like, people didn't do therapy the way, like, it wasn't a thing. But now it just feels so stupid, where it's just like, all you had to, you just, but, I mean, we did get a lot of art out of that. So, I like Jeremy Strong. I guess maybe I don't know this guy. Like, I've never seen any interviews with a real person. So maybe that's what he's doing. But I don't like what he's doing. I read a lot of people, like, praising his performance here. But every time he talked, it just... I don't know. I was like, I don't like this. I don't like it. It's so flat to me. And maybe that's the point. But... I don't know. I did not like Jeremy Strong's performance.
He's very accurate to who Springsteen was, as is. Like, because he's very evasive.
No, Jeremy Allen White, I did love.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I'm thinking the wrong
Jeremy.
Jeremy. Strong
as the manager.
Oh, okay. Like, yeah. He's the John Landau character. Like,
yeah.
Like, you know what it was? Like, it was his speech. I
was just like, I don't like this. I don't like it.
He sounded like he was doing, like, honestly, he sounded like he was doing a bad version of because I kept on seeing him in my head in the like Jeremy Strong I think has a good case for playing Rod Sterling if they ever decided to make a Rod Sterling biopic because the way he talks sounds just like that flat
here's a man yeah,
the boss who is like it's very weird. It's a very weird intonation. Like his time with Grace Gummer, like the scene with
that's another thing. Like,
yeah,
I know we haven't seen a lot from Grace Gummer, but it's like you have Grace Gummer in this, and you just have her yes anding this guy
and sitting there nodding her fucking head. She is just like she is as good. Her and Mamie are, like, literally, like, I know that they're Nepo babies. I know. But when your mother is, like, the goat of all goat actors in Meryl Streep, and you've seen what they can do, either one of them can do, why do you pigeonhole them into this role of, like, nodding? Like, why do you put Grace Gummer in this thing where you're like, oh, yeah. Uh-huh, and, like, there's no back and forth. There's no moment where this woman goes, this guy is a fucking asshole. Like, there's no moment in this movie where they go and stop, like, even fucking his girlfriend, who, oh my God, like, I have to go and, I forgot, I read this Warren Zane book that it's based off of, because I find Nebraska is a, like, I love Nebraska, but I like dark rock, right? Or dark country. Like, it was made around the same time that I feel like Neil Young was doing the same thing. Like, all these old white, all these, like, like middle 30s white dudes were all making this shitty, like, I feel bad about myself because I make so much goddamn money and the fame is coming music. And like, I enjoy that. Like, it's a mood, right? Like, it's basically the same thing as Radiohead in the 90s, right? Like, oh, woe is to me, I'm a white dude, and I make so much money, but technology and all, fuck you. Like, at the end of the day, fuck you, but I mean, I'm gonna still listen to it. But anywho, regardless of that, I read the book. I just forgot that I read the book. And when I was watching it, what actually made me think about it, because the book is so different, because it's such an internal book, and it's such about the emotions and the inspirations, it was the moment where he's watching Badlands, because yeah. He actually says that he like a lot of his, like, Nebraska was based out of his obsession with Badlands, like, so much so that if you made the movie from the book, it would basically be a remake of Badlands starring fucking Bruce Springsteen. Because that's how he was doing a lot of the ideology of, like, wanting to, like, literally sitting there wanting to murder his father wanting to murder all fathers because his dad was an abusive prick, an alcoholic abusive prick. That's basically what the book came down to, right? But here's the thing, like, this is the thing that I was like, at no point, not even his girlfriend, who he fucking ghosts and then he treats like shit, never once does she goes, oh, well, I understand. It's almost like, oh, yeah, I understand. You're the boss. So, okay, you're the boss of everything. I'm not going to get upset at you, even though you fucking played with my child's fucking emotions, you asshole. Like,
I will say at least, the story isn't, like, none of that's really glossed over. I mean, it does get a little short shrift because the Springsteen is the main focus.
Yeah.
And you only get the emotional scenes with her towards the end.
Yeah.
But it does not, like, repaint over and be like, well, you know, it does paint him in a bad light. Like, you know.
My problem is that, so basically all you have to do is just put on I'm on Fire on the moments where he's like thinking about them and it's all okay. It's like, no, it's not. I'm sorry, but you're fucking, like, you're kind of a piece of shit regardless as soon as you start, like, cause she's up front with him and it's like, oh, okay. So you're a damaged piece of shit and that makes it all right. That you fucked with this little girl and you fucked around with this single mother. But it's not good enough that you, like, you were just, like, and that's the thing, is that it would be one thing if he was just fucking around with her, but then he toys with the little girl's emotion. Like, he, like, actually, like, goes out with them together. Yeah,
that's one of the things that's just, like, you know. But, again, it was the 80s.
Yeah. And, like, yeah,
you know, it's that thing of where, like, we're looking at it from the lens of right now and we know what kind of damage that can do in the 80s. Like, it was, I'm not excusing it, but yeah, it wasn't at the forefront. And I know maybe her story would be a little bit different and a little more damning of Bruce.
Yeah.
And rightfully so, but I do give the filmmakers and Springsteen credit for not completely painting himself in a, like, this altruistic, like, you know, light that excuses all of that. Even if it kind of does with the whole, like, hey, he was not great and he needed therapy and he treated a lot of people, like, not right. You know, he wasn't abusive in the way that would be considered abusive at the time, like, emotionally distant, like, all of that shit. Yes. And those people deserve better, but hey, we got a lot of good art out of it. Like, we got a lot of, like, really great songs out of it. And that's kind of the excuse for it. And that's still not really okay. You know?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
But at least that's there, you know, as opposed to, like, a biopic about like the Ray Charles biopic, even the James Brown stuff. Like
Have you seen the James Brown one? Because
I saw the Chad, was it Chadwick Boseman?
The Chadwick one.
Yeah.
That one's amazing because he's a piece of shit in that movie.
Yeah. Yeah. That one at least does get into like how not great James Brown was.
No, like I was going to say, I was like, but like, you know, even like the, like I like Walk the, I really like Walk the Line. Like,
yeah.
Like I like, but it is still not like when we're talking about the damning, like of people, it is definitely not like, and of course, like, you know, everybody loves the true biopic among biopics, which is like, and I couldn't help but think about it while I was watching this movie, which is Dewey Cox.
Yeah.
Literally the playbook.
Almost every musical biopic, if I watch one, all I think about is, and it's funny because it's Tim Meadows that says it, right?
Yes.
when Dewey Cox, before Dewey Cox takes the stage, he has to think about every moment in his entire life.
Yep.
You know, that's what those movies are. I Saw the Light is another one. Kind of at least tries to paint the picture of like he was not a great person.
Yeah.
You know,
which can I say, like I Saw the Light, like it's weird because it's, you know, if they had casted two different people, I think I would have loved it even more. Like I like it. But because Tom
ultimately
Hiddleston
it winds
like,
up being forgettable because like Hiddleston is so not
Hank that. Williams. No, yeah. He's not Hank Williams. And Elizabeth Olsen is not Audrey. I don't know. Like at the end of the day, I can't make the leap that Tom Hiddleston turns into the Hank Williams that I know and like the father of the person that I actually really know more about, which is Hank Williams Jr. Like, I can't see it. Right? But it is very much so of the Dewey Cox. Like, it is very much of the Dewey Cox Walk Hard. Like, yep. Like thing. Like, my favorite, like, the moment that I kept on, like, the moment that we see Stephen Graham in the fat suit, I kind of giggled. I kind of giggled because I kept on thinking about.
It's not great.
No. I kept on thinking about fucking thinking about the wrong boy died. The wrong boy died. The wrong son died. And I couldn't help but laugh because, like, this movie is very well intentioned, okay? Like, Scott Cooper, like, to be honest, I hope that this movie makes $100 million and gets 10 Oscar nominations because I want more Scott Cooper movies because he's directed, like, 5 movies that I fucking absolutely adore. Crazy Heart.
Crazy Heart's really great. And Crazy Heart was, like, it got a lot of nominations.
Yeah.
Right?
It's a great movie. Like, you want to talk about a biopic that's not a biopic? Watch Crazy Heart. Like, yeah, Crazy Heart's
fucking good.
Crazy Heart, like, Places in the Heart and Crazy Heart are, like, the one in the same movie, but they're not. They just, like, I love both of those movies. Like, that's, like, and Pure Country. If we're talking about biopics of like people that are kind of in that range, like that don't exist but absolutely do exist, that are about fictional characters, those three movies are some
Pure
of
Country's
my favorites.
Pure Country's pretty good too.
Oh, dude, Pure Country with George Strait. I did not like. You want to know a funny fact? Is that I was so not a kid that knew about country because I rejected country. That when I saw Pure Country as a kid, because my mom took me to go see it. I was like, who the fuck is this George Strait guy? I had no idea that he was a country superstar, right? Because I didn't listen. Nothing with that shit. Yeah. But so great. But that out of and the furnace.
So, it's, that movie's so ahead, like
ahead of
at
its
the
time.
At the time, it was like coming down on like the more poppy country of that era, and like now we're so far fucking beyond that that like it has stayed relevant for decades.
Yep.
Because even if people don't really talk about it, you go back and watch it and like, oh shit, he's talking about like, oh, they predicted what country, but at the time he's kind of like the movie itself is kind of like striking out against like kind of like Garth Brooks and like all of that shit. And now it's just like, oh, this isn't even remotely close to country music.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like, absolutely. Like it is wild. Like, and, but it's, like you said, stayed relevant. It's fresh because it's kept to itself. Like, it kept to its own mores, which is great. Like I said, I love that. I love that movie. I actually still own my DVD of it because there's no Blu-ray of it, which is wild to me. Which is wild to me that something like
it's
that.
It's such a beloved, like, for people, country music fans, it's beloved. Mm-hmm. And it's weird that they're, I wonder if maybe it's a music rights thing or something.
It could very well be, because it, like, I know that at the time George Strait was with Warner Brothers Music, so it could very well be that if he moved his catalog, there's no way in golly green's hell that they would allow that.
Well, yeah, Warner's not gonna
pay up the money for so. It right.
Especially not this version of Warner Brothers. So
no,
you'd need another studio production, like a Blu-ray 4K production house to step in and be like, let's, like, we're buying the rights from both of y'all and then we're doing it, you know, something like that. So, anyway, back to Deliver Me, or whatever the fuck the name of the movie. You're right, it's a bad title. It's an absolutely bad title. Like, Born to Run is a better title because it's not about the song Born to Run is, you know, this guy literally running, you know, from everything.
Yep.
But, you know, he emotionally runs from everything. And so, like, Born to Run would be a better fucking title. So, yeah, Deliver Me from Nowhere is just not a good title. And then you add Springsteen to the front of that. Like, if you're going to do that, just call it Springsteen. you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
So a lot of stuff in the movie I don't like and think that it kind of drops the ball on, but it is a very well directed movie. Like, Scott Cooper is an excellent director. You know, I hope this doesn't pigeonhole him into the, like, oh, this dude directs musical biopics, you know, because depending on what happens with this, his most famous films are going to be two music, one actual biopic, one fake biopic, essentially.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Like, and I don't know, man. It's definitely a, like, I don't know, man. Like, it's, like you said, it's a very well-directed movie. There are sections of this movie that are just, like, they understand the era in which they're making the movie and the kind of films that were being made at that time.
It feels weird to be like, yeah, this is 1981 or whatever.
Yeah.
1980. What is it, set in
1980? 1979 to 1980.
Okay. Yeah. It because, like, it also kind of feels modern, but only feels a little modern because A, we're old. B, they do the black and white flashback stuff. So you kind of see the, like, late 50s, early 60s stuff. And so when you're in 1980, it feels modern. but, like, they captured it without being too, like, Wedding Singer about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Where
it's like, oh, look at the weird clothes they're wearing. Like, nobody's dressed, like, stylistically 80s. Everybody is in, like, appropriate attire. Like, in Springsteen, I mean, he is a, like, t-shirt, leather jacket, jeans guy. Like, he just is. You know? He was not, like, you know, early 80s flashy nonsense stuff. So that does kind of help. There's a lot of really good stuff here, though. Like, specifically Jeremy Allen White's performance. But, I mean, anybody who watches The Bear, especially the last few seasons of The Bear, knows that, like, oh, this man can perform his heart out and be the, like, driving force for keeping something alive.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like, his work here is so accomplished. Like, it actually makes you think that that the movie is better than it really is. If that makes sense.
I mean, if you try to anchor this movie, I honestly think I can't think of another performer, even if it wasn't like a one-to-one, like, yeah, he kind of looks like Bruce. Like, I don't know of another performer that could anchor this the way he does. But part of that is because, like, we've been watching The Bear for a few years, and it's almost the same thing as, like, oh, here's a white dude who needs fucking therapy.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, it's wild.
It's the same performance.
It really is, except for instead of cooking, it's music.
It's music. Yeah,
it's music. Like, I do appreciate the some of the side performances. Like, of course, like seeing Paul Walter Hauser.
Paul Walter Hauser's fucking great. Like, he does not get a lot of screen time, but he is fucking great. And the, like, mini movie of, like, how are we going to, like, appease this unreasonable man?
Yes.
And also, he's not wrong. It sounds better on tape. Why can't we, like, that whole little mini movie, like, they could have expanded that and cut out some of the other stuff, because that was really, I was really into that. Like, how are you gonna capture what he put down on tape and make it sound the same? And Marc Maron, why is he not speaking
the entire time until the end? Like, it's like for me, it's him, Jeremy Allen White, and then the other guy who's the tech. Like, it's all three of them, along with Walter, with Hauser in the background during those moments that make that scene work. And it's like, Marin's like, I wanted Marin in more of it. And it convinces me the thing that I've thought since I saw him in that Lynn Ramsey film, and RIP Lynn Ramsey and the love of his life, as he said. But Marc Maron is such a undervalued actor. Like, they take him as a comedian and as this podcaster, but we've undervalued him as an actor in the same way that
100%.
in the same way that we have undervalued undervalued Carlin as an actor. Yeah. When Carlin rarely decided to be a performer, and when he did, it was like, Jesus Christ, how the hell did, why didn't anybody find a role for him?
It makes me happy that he's stepping away, or has stepped away from the podcast. And, like, I think that does mean we'll see him in more acting roles, probably not starring in anything.
Yeah. But,
he's a lot of fun in the golf show that he did.
Stick.
Yeah, Stick. Like, he's a lot of fun in that. And
yes, he is.
So seeing him pop up in stuff like this, it's going to be nice. I'm with you. I don't doubt that we're going to see at least some Oscar nomination love for this movie. probably for adapted screenplay and lead performance, I would think.
Yeah.
Maybe it, not director. I mean, maybe, no, I guess it just depends on how a lot of other stuff shakes out. But
well, okay,
it wouldn't hurt my feelings.
But also, we also have to figure, like, I was at first thinking, no, there's not going to be a lot. But then I forget the governing body of the Academy are a bunch of old white dudes that are going to look at this and go, fuck yeah. Like, yeah. Okay, so this is not a dig. Like, please. And if Scott is listening to this, which I highly doubt he will, he wouldn't make it past the first 2 minutes because he'd probably get really pissed at both of us that we're making fun of the boss. Goddamn sons of bitches making fun of my boss. But he is the audience, and that audience now governs the Academy. So all of the I will not be surprised if, even if this doesn't make like $50 million, that it will get 12 nominations. It will get Best Picture, Best Actor, Best Adapted Screenplay, Best Actor, Best Supporting Actor, probably for Jeremy Allen Strong, maybe even for Krumholtz, because there, it's about time that we nominate, we give a nomination to Krumholtz for something. And he's so good in the three scenes that he's in. He's kind of swarmy. But at the same time, it would be for like, oh, well, you know what? Krumholtz has been good in everything that he's been doing for the last 30 years.
Probably should have gotten something for...
Numbers?
Well, yeah. But even in the last couple of years, like...
Yeah.
The Nolan movie. Oppenheimer.
Oppenheimer. Like, he's so good in that. Yeah. But anywho, like... I'm thinking like 10 to 12. It's going to be one of those ones that everybody's go, the fuck? Or if it makes like 100 million, if it cracks 100 million, I guarantee you it's not going to seem funny. Like, this is going to be under comedy and musical in at the Golden Globes, and it's going to sweep.
Yeah.
It's going to sweep.
Oh, for sure.
At the Globes, it's going to be all me, 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 like... You guys can't see what I'm doing off screen. Thank God you can't, because I say this very nicely. It's not that I dislike the movie. It's just, it's like, Jesus fucking Christ. Really? Like, we're going to play this part of the tune. We're not going to update the biopic. We're gonna make something that's kind of down the middle, even though it appears
that's probably the biggest disappointment is that, and I don't know why I ever get my hopes up about musical biopics, because ultimately they're always all the same. This one does have a few like things, you know, like it does dive into the like he's not always a great person kind of aspect of it, but it is just a standard music biopic. Like, there's nothing other, and it is the performances. That's why you're there. Other than like a solid lead performance, there's nothing else really here.
Like, and it's not like, hold on.
It's nothing a good documentary couldn't have accomplished.
No, and to be perfectly honest, like, the book, the more I started, watching the movie, the more I remembered the book, and the more, like, I can recommend... Actually, there's a book that I wanted to recommend to you, because you're a Tom Petty fan, is Warren Zeid's book about Tom Petty.
Yeah, which I want to read that.
Oh my gosh, dude. I read that over the summer, because I bought it. And that's a great book.
There's a documentary on, is it on Prime or somewhere?
It's Paramount Plus, and it's actually directed by Cameron Crowe.
Yeah, I want to watch that. I haven't got to it. I want to watch it. So
let's hope that they're not making a Tom Petty biopic, because there's nobody.
Please don't.
Like, there's nobody don't. That can play. Like, what are they going to get Timothy Chalamet to play? Basically. Bob Dylan 2.0.
No, I don't want to see that. No. Please don't.
a friend of mine called me up. He was like, cause he wanted to know what my opinion was of it. He was like, oh, did you see the movie? Did you watch it? Cause he's a big Springsteen fan. Not as big as Scott is, or even not as big as Spencer, because both of them are really big Springsteen fans from what I understand. But he's a pretty big one. And I'm like, yeah, I did, is okay. It was what it was. He goes, did you watch the ending credit scene? I'm like, what? What do you mean ending credit scene? He goes, yeah, didn't you see Timothy Chalamet and his Bob Dylan came on? I'm putting a team together. I started fucking laughing, dude. I'm like, holy shit. I'm like,
no, that's going to be the end. That's the end of the Tom Petty biopic, because yes, then you make the next movie about the super group with Petty and
the Traveling Wilburys, yeah, him, Roy
Orbison. The fucking, the Avengers of musicians.
now, my question is who do you get to play, who do you get to play, who do you get to play Roy Orbison? There was nobody, like, do you get Jeremy Allen, do you get Jeremy Strong to go method gain, like, 50 pounds? Yeah,
sure.
With those fucking glasses? And the one thing that bothered me is that Jeremy Allen White did not, like, he's so method, but not method enough. Like, at least T-Shams sung like Dylan, like sung on the tracks. Jeremy Allen White did not sing at all, and that disappointed me. That disappointed me that he didn't even try, because he's like I said, he's so method about things. Like, I've heard that he was method, like, he's method. Not Jeremy Strong version of method. Like, have you heard this? You've heard the stories. I want to meet him just because of how weirdo, deranged people, and people actively don't like him. They actively don't like him, so much so that Anne Hathaway had to say, he's a good guy, guys. Trust me. He is really a good guy.
He's just stuck in character.
Just stuck in character all the fucking time.
I do kind of, like, because you have that Springs, you have all of the music, you have the tapes, you have the raw stuff.
Yeah.
I understand. Not like, and you have the live performances, like, all of that shit is so recorded because of the era that he's lived in.
Yep.
That I understand not, like, use what you have. Don't try to make it up. Like, I do kind of understand that.
I do, you know? Too. I do too. Like, and that's the thing. Like, what I love is
how, it also,
like,
saves you money, because you're paying for the catalog anyway. So you're like, well, we're buying this, so we're just going to use the tracks we have.
Yeah. So. And like, for anybody that thinks he's an artist, and again, Scott, I'm sorry, man, but it's very fascinating to me that he was like this one way. But in conjunction with this movie, Springsteen is releasing a super box set of Nebraska Electric, all of the outtakes, which they make fun of in the fucking movie.
Yeah. Where they, like, talk about how terrible they are. And he's just like, now buy it.
like all of this shit. And I'm like, what? Like, it's like a $500 box set. And you know that it's going to be sold. Literally, there's going to be, like, thousands of people that buy this shit.
It happened with the Beatles, man.
Yeah. Like, well, they're making 5 movies about the Beatles. Yeah.
And but remember when Anthology came out? And it was just, God, like, yes. There's a bunch of, like, shit that was not good enough for us to ever put out.
Yeah.
So, well, like, here's this, and you're gonna buy it, right? Like, every fucking body I knew was like, oh, I've got, like, Anthology's great. I'm just like, okay. Like, it's the Beatles, but, like, it's unfinished shit. Like, it's stuff that, like, literal musicians and music producers were like, you can't put that out. And now it's because they're the Beatles. It's just like, oh, I gotta have everything. I mean, it's the way we are, man. So
yeah, well, like, do you remember that? Do you remember how, like, we heard of legends of, like, the Sgt. Pepper, like, outtakes, and how they were supposed to be great? I listened to them; they're not that great, man. They're George Martin knew what he, Sir George Martin knew what he was doing.
It's an interesting, like, thing of, like, I like having this just as a curiosity. It's not something that, you know, like, if I'm gonna listen to the Beatles, man, I'm gonna listen to the finished product. So
absolutely.
All right, so next week, I don't know what we're talking about, but I'm going to see Back to the Future. next Friday night in the theater. Yep. So we might be having a just Back to the Future talk. You still haven't seen Black Phone 2, right?
And no, I have not, because I haven't had a chance, unfortunately. Yeah. But I am planning on going to see that.
Yeah, if you get to that, we'll talk some Black Phone 2. Because I weirdly enough, I do think Black Phone 2 and Back to the Future, or the Black Phone franchise and Back to the Future, have a lot in common. So
that's interesting.
So maybe that'll be the discussion next week. But until then, hey, it's a short episode. Until then, go check out everything else we do over at xwingfiles.com, or you can read our written work over at Adam's website.
Yes, themovieisle.com, where we're fixers and we're going to fix the world. and if you fucking believe that, I mean,
there's a hole in Adam's floor.
Yes.
And as soon as he's done fixing it or filling it with 4K Blu-rays, he's gonna fix the world.
Gonna fix the fucking world, I swear to God. I'm a fixer, and it's got the hole the size of the east fucking wing. But anyways, I digress. Yes, so you could read my work, like where we're actually talking about a bunch of 4Ks. I actually have a bunch of stuff that's going to probably be posting in the next couple of days. The most recent thing that I actually had reviewed and actually got posted was, and it just posted today, is Radioland Murders, which is a lot better than people, I think, gave it credit for even at the time, but even like it really deserves a rediscovery. I really did like it.
It's a fun movie. I haven't revisited it in a good 5 or 6 years, but man, it's a lot of fun. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. And then I will give one more stay away from The Woman in Cabin 10. Like that movie is terrible. Terrible. Like I was getting super excited. I was going to watch it, and yeah, it was terrible. There's a lot of terrible movies right now on Netflix, and just stay away from every single one of them because they are all bad. I think I've inactively watched them from the background, and yeah, no, don't watch them. Yeah. But also, we'll be back next week talking about whatever. Also, like, I don't know if you watched it, but the Netflix series Nobody Wants This is back, and I'm super excited. Yeah,
me and Steph keep meaning to, or I've kind of twisted her arm to like sit down and watch it. So,
if you liked,
hopefully soon.
Okay, if you liked the basketball show, this is so much better. Like, this is like actually much better than the basketball show. I know it sounds weird, but whatever. We'll be back next week talking.
Well, see you guys then.
Number one Star Wars, number two comics, number three Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit, number four Mario, number five Weird Al, number six Batman, number seven Cal El, number eight Simpsons, number nine TV, number 10 every single band that has stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out, say hello together if you're with me now. Nerds ruin everything.